Now, most of you I know have an internet account and maybe even a Facebook page, or at least check these things from time to time. And we all do research all the time, and we get some good information and some bad and mostly irrelevant. But once in a while, there's a really pithy little saying or quote that kind of hits you. And you never know what's going to happen. And it's kind of like that immediately we hear in the gospel, immediately it speaks. This week was one that said, "She fell from their graces into her truth." She fell from their graces into her truth. Now, social graces are kind of important because they keep us actually speaking to one another. Imagine if none of you had any manners, what fun this would be this morning. It would be rampant and crazy, and it would be much like some of those books we read about. Social graces keep us being polite and keep us in line to a point. But they do something else. They add expectation to us. And the expectations of others can be totally overwhelming at times. We all know what it's like to have someone, after you've done something that you think you might have done okay at, come up to you and say, "Well, that wasn't what I expected." Or you didn't do that well enough, or perhaps you're not good enough, or whatever it is. Expectations are fed and absolutely elevated by social graces. I remember when I was just getting ready to be ordained. It was about a week before my ordination, and I was flitting about, as I often do. I know you know that. And someone came up to me and said, "Well, I guess things will be quite different this time next week." I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, you won't be wearing those clothes anymore." I said, "What are you talking about?" "Well, those bright things you wear. Those clothes, you won't be wearing those once you're ordained." And I thought, well, I know a clergy collar is not attractive, but surely we can work with it. Surely it doesn't have to be ugly just because it's a uniform. And I was quite astonished. My mother and father had a great sense of dress, and so I was not going to let their expectations down. And for the first while when I was ordained, I know it was a little bit of, I knew I could do it. Now I just realized it's just the way I am. The graces that we are put onto us, the social graces, do lead to high expectations. But they're rather lacking, aren't they? A bit hollow, a bit lackluster, and have nothing much really to do with the gift of God's grace. And falling from graces is an essential part of faith and of grace itself. Because it's only once we have fallen that we know what's really important to us. Graces, you see, keep people at a bit of a distance. They keep people at a bit of a bay. They often dismiss people who need the grace the most, and they obviously ignore the whole truth of almost any situation. And when you fall from grace, it is a risk of faith. Today, we hear in two amazing stories combined into one in the Gospel. We hear about Jesus, of course, going across the sea again. One would think he never does anything in Mark but go back and forth across the sea and travel around. And, of course, the crowds are with him. And then a leader of the synagogue, someone who would stoop to no one, who would beg for nothing, comes to beg of Jesus. Begging, reduced from his position, for the life of his daughter. We don't even get very far with that story when we jump to another one, because the crowds are pressing in and we have the woman who has been bleeding for 12 years. She's tried everything. Now you need to understand, of course, that in that time and place, there weren't any three things that could be much more wrong with you. She was a woman. She was bleeding. And she had no standing. None whatsoever. Nothing had worked. And so there she was in this massive crowd, And we know that she was low in the crowd. She probably was so afraid of the social grace that she had left, which was just that she was a human being, that she probably, you can see her, imagine her bent down in that crowd, trying to get through it just to touch Jesus' cloak. She couldn't speak to him. She did not have the social standing to do that. She couldn't even ask one of his disciples because she would be approaching one of the men. And she knew, she believed, if she just touched his clothing, she would be healed. Talk about every social grace being thrown away when Jesus says, "Who touched me?" Now, the disciples, of course, are rather astonished because they cannot possibly understand how Jesus could tell in this huge crowd that someone had touched him. But one of the amazing things about Jesus was his presence and his ability to stand in the moment and to feel and to perceive everything that was going on. And when she had to come forward, because she knew she had to speak the truth, her truth, she came up in fear and trembling and bowed down before him. No social grace. She had nothing to lose. She took the last risk that she had by touching his cloak, and then even more risk by going and telling him what she had done. And of course, she is indeed already healed. Not only is she healed in her body, but he raises her up and says, "Your faith has made you well. It's fine that you touched me." Imagine when you have missed every expectation, fallen as low as you can go, and someone has the grace just to say, "You did it. It's all you need to do. God is here for you." Then we go back to Jairus again, because we're not finished with him either. Because Jairus is still there waiting for Jesus' attention and hoping that something can happen for his daughter when the leaders come and say, "Forget it. Your daughter's dead." So here he was, a man of power and great authority, and yet here he was begging from a teacher who hung around with all the wrong kinds of people. He risked every single thing in his profession and in his life for his daughter. So Jesus says, "Well, I'll come with you. I'll come back with you." And she's not dead, she's just asleep. And we know what happens. They laughed at him. So even Jesus, who has at this time obviously gained popularity, has this time done enough stuff that he is the head of the social graces of the people who are crowding around him, is laughed at for saying that there is life within this child. And he heals her. And being ever practical, Jesus says, "Give her something to eat." She's probably hungry after dying like that and coming back to life. Grace demands, graces, social graces demand decorum and dignity, none of which we hear here except in the respect of the person. Grace explodes the expected, and presents something that one is not expecting. We have lots of expectations in our church. We always do, because we need expectations, of course, as well. They're kind of a double-edged sword. We need expectations to have something to live up to, something to strive to. And of course, many years ago, we had churches that were full. Some of you remember the days when children had to line up to come to Sunday school at St. John's, down the street. I've heard stories about that. Hundreds of children. And the pews were full, the place was packed, and everything seemed great, but that only happened once in history. Once, ever. And I have heard stories also of how that was when you went to church, it was business. You were doing business. Because your colleagues went to church and you were doing not just faith, but social action in terms of connections. Now it's not like that. And my friend and colleague Monique Stone, who's the priest in CARP, wrote an article this week that talked about how, when there may only be a few people in church, how amazing it is that anyone's there. How amazing it is that you're here this morning. because no one has to be here. You are not getting social brownie points for being in church this morning, I can assure you. If you go to Starbucks later or the Ministry of Coffee, they won't really care that you've been to church. They may look at you kind of funny, the people that you meet. And she talked about how it's not about the social graces that we now fulfill to come to church, but that we hope to receive and to offer and to live out grace. She talked about the teenager that may not actually want to be in church, but has to be, and yet when they leave, has made a new connection with an older person they'd never met before. They encountered grace. They found grace, not because it was expected of them. When I was at Ashbury, I never really thought about the fact that I had this huge youth congregation. The bishop said to me, "You have the biggest youth group in the entire diocese, Beth. You have 680 students. You see them every week, twice a day." And there they were. And it wasn't until I came to St. John's, and the first Sunday I was here, I thought, oh my, you're all here because you want to be here. It changed my attitude completely from expecting this. They were expected. Not only that, they were, attendance was taken. I refused to take it, but attendance was taken as to whether they were at chapel. They had to be there. So I really had to try and make it interesting because it's a bad combination. But when I came here, I was struck by the first time in my life about how we get to choose our faith. And how when we come to church, we are actually saying no to other things. We're saying yes to being here for that moment of grace. That one moment. Now, I need to tell you that Monique got hate mail about her article. It's always amazing to me what people choose to get upset about. But she actually texted it to me and said, "Can you believe that someone wrote that, well, no wonder the Anglican Church is in decline because the clergy don't care who comes to church on Sunday. Or how many people are there?" And I texted Monique back and said, they missed the whole point. They missed the whole point. It's not about the numbers. It's about what is here in this place. And not even in this place, but when we gather. That's the grace. It's not about the social graces. So sometimes we have to fall from others' graces to find our own truth, personally and as a community. And so I hope that we individually and together in this place, even if this building was no longer here, together in this community of faith, may find our own truth and live it out so that others may find theirs. Amen.